Support from Hanson Gress, seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
Toksik Musum Salama, thank you and welcome to Juno Afternoon from community-supported KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us via our live stream on KTOO's YouTube and Facebook pages. Today, we meet Bartlett Regional Hospital's new gynecologist, Dr. Jess Young, who specializes in women's health with specialties in menopause and sexual medicine. Deborah Craig and Linda Kruger share monthly updates and events via the Juno Commission on Aging. This Friday, First Friday, Spice Cafe is hosting a special exhibit, Bees in Juno, featuring photos from local Juno artists. It's part of the acoustic turbulence projects happening via the Orpheist project. We chat with the team involved. And we begin today. We begin today with Trina Lynch Johnson, here to preview her talk, The Briefcase, happening next Thursday, February 12th, about her memories and interactions with her late uncle, Charles Dean Buggs, and his mask work. Charles Dean Buggs was a Juneau, Alaska-based artist, teacher, and mentor known for creating elaborate masks from brown paper bags to promote cultural diversity. Trina Lynch Jackson has curated exhibits of his armature masks, including a recent one last year, The Art of the Paper Mask, at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. And next week, she has a special talk called The Briefcase. It's next Thursday, February 12th, at the Valley Library, beginning at 5:30 p.m. And Trina Lynch Jackson joins me now to share more. Gunathish Wasiati, Trina, how are you?
I am fabulous, Boston. How are you?
I'm excellent, except for some reason the camera for you isn't working. So that's not good. I don't like that.
The joys of technology.
So I'm just going to bring up your card here that talks about what you're going to be doing next Thursday at the Valley Library in the large meeting room. But we're going to talk about your uncle. And so can you tell me a little bit more about Mr. Buggs? And he's your uncle and also his legacy.
Well, he arrived here in Juneau in 1988. But prior to him coming to Juneau, he was an art teacher in Washington, D.C.
Mm.
So he was also a curator at the Children's Museum in Washington, D.C. And the start of his mask making was actually as a student at Howard University.
Okay.
He was instructed to create something for $5.
Okay.
$5,
wow.
Boston. And he worked in a mailroom. And in the mailroom, he noticed there was a lot of paper, just a lot of wasted paper. And he thought, I should be able to make something with this paper. Mm. And that's when he created the armature mask.
Oh, wow.
So it was less than $5 for him to do this. He perfected it. Of course, he aced the class.
Yeah.
But he perfected it. And that's when he started teaching young children how to do this.
Okay.
But as a child, I remember my uncle just sketching my brother and I, starting off with charcoal. So he's always had this gift of art, and my grandmother, Edna Buggs, always encouraged him. So he was also an avid fisherman and a gardener. So he came to Juneau just to go fishing, and he fell in love.
As often is the case.
Absolutely. So he retired from both of his positions. He put his vehicle on a ferry, and he ferried over here to Juneau, as I said, in 1988.
Wow.
He became a mental health worker here, but he also, again, volunteered at the junior high school. And I don't want to mispronounce the high school. I always say DZ.
Okay.
And he worked with the youth there. He actually had shows at the Jack, really with the youth. And a lot of the mass that he did there, some of them he saved. And when he passed 14 years ago, I almost feel like I should have been in These Birds. Let me give them a plug.
Oh, the play running right now.
Yes,
yeah.
I could actually share a story about that. And that's what I'll be doing when I talk about The Briefcase.
And that's going to be next Thursday at the Valley Library at 5:30. And I wanted to ask you about that. This it's honoring him. And can you share a little bit about what that story is going to be that we're going to see, that you're going to hear him next week?
Well, my uncle and I communicated a lot because he had no children, and I was always worried about him. I'm the first grandchild. I'm the first child in the family. And when he came to Alaska, I would send magazines. We would write notes. I would talk to him, and I didn't realize he was saving all of that.
Oh, wow.
And at some point, when I would talk to him on the phone, he would ask me for, what's your Social Security number? And, you know, not knowing, I gave him all that information. But at some point, I noticed a cough in our conversations. And I asked him, is everything all right? And he would pause, and he would say, everything's fine. And I'd say, do I need to come there and check on you? Oh, no, 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 everything's fine. But I did decide to fly here and check on my uncle. And when I arrived, he had that cough. And I'll get into more of that cough as I tell the story next Thursday.
Okay.
But that cough is the compelling thing that he kept saying, oh, I'm fine, I'm fine. But eventually that cough was more than a cough.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, last year I mentioned in the intro that you had the Art of the Paper Mask at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. You had that show. You have this talk coming up, The Briefcase, about your interaction with him. And then you also, I know you've written a book of poetry, and I think some of the poems in there are inspired by your conversations with him and your work with him. And I'm just curious about your commitment to continuing this work and honoring this legacy of his. Where does that come from in you?
Family is extremely important. And when I think about Juneau is a community of families. Everyone here is amazing. But my uncle left the mask and he left his condo to me because he knew that I would honor him. And that's extremely important. So, again, it's a sense of family. Many of my family members are from New Orleans. We are prayerful people. We are people that praise people. But the legacy of family is critical.
Yeah.
So,
that's
again,
amazing.
That's what Juneau is about.
And how many masks? I know you brought one in today. I'm sad that well, I could hold it, actually. Let me see that.
Okay.
Let me see that camera there.
Well, at the Jack, I had 21 masks on display.
Okay. How many did he leave?
He left me about 30
masks.
About 30 masks.
Yeah.
And prior to me retiring here, I would go to the different schools in Northwest Indiana because I'm a retired professor from Ivy Tech Community College. But I started the entrepreneurship program there. So I would go to the different schools, and I became a storyteller.
Oh, nice.
And I would tell stories about my uncle and our relationship, because I want to encourage entrepreneurs. And people don't realize storytelling is a major art here in Juneau. Poetry is major here. So the spoken word is a creative talent as well.
Yeah, these are beautiful. And so these are made out of paper.
Made out of paper mache.
Wow.
And if you notice, when you put your hand in that mass, that's actually, when you think about holding a baseball mitt, that's the form of it. So it's actually a human head. The masks that are going to be on display at the Valley Library are a combination of masks. There will be, of course, the raven, because he always wanted to honor the Native Alaskans here. You will see one of the Day of the Dead. You will see a lot of African cultured masks. And he really studied all the masks and the different cultures. So at the library, I have masks on display there, and I will also have books that he researched in making the mask. So just an amazing, very humble man who loved to fish and, again, loved Juno.
And this thing that you, this booklet that you gifted me, which is so nice of you, thank you, Gwyneth Cheese, for that, The Art of the Paper Mask, The Armature Method by Charles Buggs, is this something that people can get their hands on as well?
Well, they can check it out at the library.
Oh, they can have it if they have it at the library.
Yes, they can check it out at the library.
Yeah.
That actually shows you step by step on how to create a mask.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
And at the Jack last year, I also have a video of him talking about how to create the mask. We're not going to be able to show that at the library.
Right.
Who knows when I'll be able to do another show, but I try to honor him every year. That's important to me.
Yeah, that's so great, Trina. It's a really wonderful legacy to keep alive, and as you mentioned, through family. So not only will you have the talk next week, but you'll have some of the masks there on display.
Absolutely.
That is so amazing. And if we want to find out more about these masks or you, is there a way to do that? Is there a website, or if people want to read your poetry book? I know that's online available, but is there, like, where can we see these?
Boston, I try to be low-key. I knew you'd love that. I try to be low-key. I'm around. Anyone that knows me, I'm at the Senior Center laughing. I'm the life of the party there. I support all of the theater here in Juneau. I think that's extremely important. I'm going to do a shout-out to the COPA. I go there.
Let me
do a shout-out to the Wild Oven. Boston, I am everywhere.
All right. I love that. Trina Lynch Jackson, and she's everywhere, but next week she'll specifically be at the Valley Library beginning. The talk begins at 5:30. You'll get to see some of Charles Buggs's masks, and as well as listen to the story, The Briefcase, all about Trina's interaction with her uncle, Charles Dean Buggs. Trina, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to have you in again. Break a leg next week on the talk, and we look forward to hearing more and seeing you again next year when you celebrate again.
Thank you, Boston.
I really appreciate it.
You are amazing.
Gwyneth Cheese, thank you. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Most years, Wisconsin farmer Josh Bryson sells about 2,000 pounds of garlic, but increasingly extreme weather is making his harvest less reliable.
What we've seen with excessive amounts of rain is we will have more pest and disease in that crop. And in the last 2 years, I've only been able to make 400 pounds.
In addition to running the farm, Bryson works as the director of grower support programs at the Good Acre, a nonprofit in the Twin Cities. He consults with many farmers in the region who, like him, are struggling with the impacts of climate change.
It's very common to hear rain eroding ground to the point where it can't be planted anymore.
He says there are some ways to prepare and adapt. For example, planting cover crops on fallow fields can reduce erosion, and covered structures called high tunnels can help protect crops from harsh conditions. And he says it's important not to rely on just one crop. On his farm, in addition to growing garlic and other vegetables, he raises a small herd of dairy cattle and sells milk and cheese. So he says having multiple income streams softens the blow if a crop fails, and can help keep the farm going in increasingly challenging times. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Dr. Jess Young has begun working at Bartlett Family Medicine as a gynecologist. The Bartlett website says, with years of clinical experience and specialized training in menopause and sexual medicine, Dr. Young partners with women to address a wide range of health needs, from routine gynecological exams to complex menopausal concerns and sexual health awareness. Dr. Young, welcome to Juno. Welcome to the show. Gunnar the Cheese for being here. Wasiati, how are you today?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me in the studio this afternoon. It's so lovely to meet you.
Yeah, it's lovely to meet you too. So let's start with the obvious question. How did you come to working here in Juno?
Happenstance, really. My husband, shout out to Dr. Philip Brunetti with Bartlett Ophthalmology. He's been commuting to Bartlett for about a year from Fairbanks, where we live with our four-year-old. And he had a conversation with one of the physician recruiters and said, my wife's a gynecologist. Are you guys interested in having her come by? Mm. And they found out that I did menopause and sexual medicine. So here we are.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you're still commuting? Are you eventually going to relocate here?
Yes. So through his year of travels, my son and I have joined him on a few trips, and we really, really love Juno. We have not had the chance to find a house yet, but we are looking at relocating.
Okay. Well, that's
very
fantastic.
Very happy to be here.
And for the Bartlett Family Medicine,
yes.
You're the only gynecologist there.
I am the only one.
Well, that's good news then,
yeah.
I guess, for a lot of people here in Juno.
I feel really special.
Yeah, that's really great. So what is your journey to the field of gynecology? How did that begin for you all those years ago?
Oh, yeah, it goes way back. So back when I was an undergrad and trying to figure out which direction I wanted to go, I met this amazing anthropologist who has a bunch of books out there about women's health, kind of all incorporated. Her name is Dr. Martha Ward. Mm. And so through her, I got really interested in birth norms, reproductive justice. And so that kind of spiraled me into this women's health field.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. And so I was originally going to try to be a midwife, but my mother and my aunt, my cousin, literally everybody in my family is a nurse.
Oh, okay.
And so like any good doctor, all the nurses around me told me to be a physician. And so I did. They all told me what to do. And I went, okay, yes.
Okay, yes.
So
I'll
here
do
we
that.
Are.
Yeah, that's so crazy. I love
yeah.
it. So I mentioned in the intro that you have studied and have interest in specific areas of women's health beyond the general practice, which you also do.
Yes.
But can you share a little about those and what drew you to those specialties?
Yeah, I got really interested in doing perimenopause and menopause management through my patients. It was a deficiency of my own, I'll admit it. People would come in and they would say, I think that I'm starting to go through the change, but I'm only in my 30s or 40s. What is happening to me? Mm. You know, they start to say, like, I'm waking up at night. I start to feel kind of crazy. I just feel imbalanced. And so that inspired me to learn more. So I became menopause certified, and I've been practicing with that certification for a couple of years now, and I've really, really enjoyed it.
Is it something where you just don't think about it until it begins? And so it wasn't really even in your radar, even as a gynecologist?
Yeah, even as a gynecologist. And I mean, and I'll be honest, through my OBGYN residency and training that last 4 years, it's something that's kind of ignored. We're so focused on either if you're pregnant or if you're really, really sick. Those are the patients that get a lot of our time and focus, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Good for them, but then there's this whole group of women who are essentially fairly normal who are just kind of neglected.
Yeah, so, that's amazing. My grandmother was a nurse and a teacher, and she specialized in menopause. And it's always interesting to me because of how people come to that particular field. And it is something, I mean, as a man, there's things that are also men's health that you don't necessarily think about until you get to be my age.
Right.
And then you go, oh, okay, I got to start thinking about that.
Exactly.
Yeah, how does that affect my life? Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, and what about sexual medicine? What is that field? I don't even know what that means.
So sexual medicine, it's, again, kind of still in the general field of OBGYN. But again, it's something that it's not high risk, right? It's not somebody who's going to be sick, or it's not somebody who's going to be pregnant. So again, it's not fully met. But sexual medicine is focusing more on the different stages of arousal, desire, sexual intercourse, and where in your life you might be able to make a difference.
Okay.
I mean, we're sexual creatures, right? So the idea that you just stop having a sex drive after you no longer have the ability to have children is kind of crazy.
Right.
And so, again, my patients just kind of pushed me to learn more. So now I spend a lot of time trying to, like, figure out where in their life we can improve it.
And how do you how do you do that? Is it through some sort of therapy, or what is
the process?
Is it going through person's history and figuring out
how
other areas of your life might affect them?
Absolutely, you're right.
Yeah.
So doing a very thorough history and physical exam, seeing if there's any medications that could be causing their issues, seeing if they have any past trauma, to see if they have any other medical issues that could be affecting them. Maybe they have a history of endometriosis that's impacting their ability to fully enjoy their sexual selves. So just trying to tease out what the issue is, and then how to best fix it. And then doing extended surveys, too.
Can I stop you there?
Oh, for sure.
What is endometriosis?
Oh, sorry. Thank you for clarifying. So endometriosis is one of the chronic pelvic pain syndromes that we see a lot in gynecology. And so it essentially means you have really painful menstrual cycles.
Okay.
But it can really start to affect your life because it's not just a heavy bleeding. It's super, super painful for some people.
Wow.
And again, if you're having chronic pelvic pain or any sort of chronic pain all the time, that's obviously going to impact your libido, your sex drive, and your desire to have intercourse. So it can really affect you as a person and then your relationships with other people.
Okay. Yeah. And so that's so interesting that I love that your patients in both areas of specialty there kind of drove you there as you were learning and, you know, sort of and kind of figuring out where you would specialize. Yeah, that's really kind of cool. So I know I just want to mention this, too, that you the way you operate, like you have you believe in sort of a personalized health plan and education. Can you talk a little bit about those?
For sure. And that's kind of why I was using the word concierge gynecologist.
Mm.
So what I'm trying to do with my practice is I had a private practice in Fairbanks for almost 2.5-ish years, and I did combination OB and GYN. And what I really like what I'm doing in Juneau is I'm doing strictly GYN. And why does this matter? Because I'm not having to constantly respond to labor and delivery during your GYN visits with me. I'm purely focused on you, what your needs are in this visit, and then I try to do extended visits too. So I have time to do those, like, hypoactive sexual desire surveys and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. You can go one-on-one, really get in detail with somebody.
Spend some time with someone and come up with a customized, tailored plan for how we're going to address their issues and what we're going to do with our next visit.
Okay. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm talking with Dr. Jess Young, who is the one and only gynecologist over at the Bartlett Family Medicine Center. So what are some of the things that folks may not realize about gynecology and how it can help with their overall health?
Yeah, I think the most important thing, you should obviously be getting your routine care with your PCP, but just knowing that a lot of patients that I've seen since I started my clinic here, they're just tired. They're experiencing a lot of fatigue and a lot of issues with trying to maintain focus. And some of that could very well be early signs of perimenopause.
Mm.
And so just trying to address those issues, make sure it's not a medical issue, and then kind of getting therapy from there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is what are some of the symptoms that might lead somebody to contact you directly, or, you know, I mean, they may go through their family doctor first and then be referred to you. Is that
absolutely
how it works?
Yeah. So I'm still doing regular GYN. So if, you know, you're seen in the ER and you need follow up or something like that. But a lot of my patients that I've started to build up are all referrals from family medicine, which is fantastic. And I can't thank them enough for being good partners. But signs of perimenopause. Fatigue is a huge one.
Mm.
Abnormal bleeding, so if your menstrual cycles start to just feel not quite right. Losing your libido, not getting restful sleep at night, hot flashes, night sweats, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So it all starts, the average age of menopause is 51 to 52. But through research, we've learned that perimenopause can start as early as 10 years out from that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're noticing that it's starting at a much earlier age than we ever really realized. And we just didn't talk about it enough before.
So what's the best way that people can reach out to you to get more information or find out if they should be coming to you? And what is that info?
So I'm at Bartlett Family Medicine, and the telephone number to schedule appointments or talk to me is 907-789-2910. And if they want to find out more about me or talk to me, they can contact me through my email, which is drjess@younggyn.com.
Younggyn.com.
Yes.
And that's also the website where you began the concierge sort of gynecologist, which I was talking to you about off air, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And can you describe that a little bit more? It's like you're basically meeting people where they're at, kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Trying to make sure that, again, it's really about improving access to specialized care, giving people longer appointment times, and making sure that they can access their physician to go over their results and making sure they have access to their results in like a timely manner.
Yeah, because is it most of the time, is it OB and gynecology together most of the time?
It is.
Yeah.
And so I'm still a practicing OBGYN. I still deliver babies. I just don't do it in Juno.
Just don't do it in Juno. You do it at some other places
that
do. You work.
I do. I travel to Seattle and Wisconsin for now. So.
Wow, that's amazing. I love that. Well, it's really great to meet you and to have you in Juno. I do want to mention that tomorrow you'll be doing a Q&A. We're going to have them on the show tomorrow. There's something going on called, it's a film, I believe.
Yeah, it
is. The M Factor.
Yeah, it's going to be a documentary, and so I was asked if I would participate in a QA afterwards. So anybody who has any questions or interest in me or what I do, please come by and talk to me.
Yeah, and we'll be having those folks on tomorrow to talk a little bit about that show that's happening. I believe it's the Gold Town. Yeah, I think so. Jess says, I think so. I'm pretty sure. Well, really pleasure to meet you, Dr. Jess Young, Bartlett Family Medicine. You can reach out. You can Google it. Go to Bartlett's website. The phone number is there. And then Jess also gave it out. Or you can reach her at her email. Give that out one more time for
it's
folks, Jess.
Dr. Jess, DRJES, at Young, Y-O-U-N-G, guyn.com.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Gunna the Cheese for being here. It was a pleasure to
Thank
meet you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Bird Note. Even if you had feathers, lightweight bones, and powerful wings, you would still lack something essential to flying like a bird. the highly efficient breathing anatomy that powers the exertion of flight. The human apparatus of diaphragm and lungs is just not up to the job. It can't extract enough oxygen to fuel flight. A bird's breathing anatomy is far more efficient than ours. It is driven by large, thin-walled air sacs located throughout the body cavity. The air sacs operate like bellows, first storing and then directing air to create a one-way flow through the bird's lungs. This parabronchial system for extracting oxygen from the air has a far greater surface area than the lungs of a mammal, making sustained flight possible. And birds lack a diaphragm. Instead, they inhale and exhale using special muscles that expand or contract the entire body cavity and air sacs. The way they breathe allows migrating birds to fly in the thin air thousands of feet above the earth, a feat we can only marvel at from below. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm Boston Christopher, and joining me now in the studio are Deborah Craig and Linda Kruger from the Juno Commission on Aging. Gunth Cheesh, welcome back. It's another month. We have more updates and info. How are you both today?
We're I'm good.
Great.
Thanks so much. We're ready to go.
So who's starting? What do we got? What's the update?
Deb's on first.
Deb's
well,
up.
Yeah. And we just wanted to bring it to people's attention because this can be a big issue for some people. Mm-hmm. We have an update to a bill, an update to some the Alaska guardianship and conservatorship statutes. And we just wanted to give kudos to Senator Keel for updating these statutes to improve the system. Guardianship is it's a legal process that's used when people can no longer make or communicate safe or sound decisions about their person or their property. And so they've kind of become susceptible to fraud and undue influence. And so establishing a guardianship kind of removes considerable rights from that person, but it's only considered an alternative when that person isn't able to advocate for themselves. But it's really important that we have good guardianship programs in place. Mm. And so Senator Keel is helping to improve that system. And again, we just wanted to acknowledge that. We also wanted to point out that should you need help with a guardianship, or you just want to know about guardianship, or if you'd like to be a helper, if you'd like to be a guardian, because a lot of people in retirement, Linda and I know tons of people in retirement. We all have these administrative jobs. We dealt with budgets. We dealt with major issues. If you're considering being a guardian, just Google Guardianship Alaska, and you will get access to the court system and the Office of Public Advocacy. And again, this is an important issue for people who are no longer able to care for themselves. The other angle we want to pull into this is that aging is so cool, as we always say, that everybody's doing
yes,
it.
Yes, they are.
But people do it differently. Mm. And some people are able to age out in a healthy way without lots of help. Other people, not so much. And the bottom line is nobody gets out of here alive. So
wow, happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
Yeah. No, it's Thursday.
Hey, you know, we're lucky that we're still aging. So plan ahead. Have a will, a power of attorney, an advance directive so people know what you want if you become incapacitated or, goodness sakes, you die. And I wanted to point out, too, there's a great play in town you've already highlighted on K2 a lot of times, These Birds. It's playing in Juneau. It's about death, flowers, and Farkle. And on February 6th and February 13th, the play is going to be followed by sessions called Get Your Affairs in Order. Mm-hmm. And it's about wills and POAs and advance directives and ensuring that the people that you leave behind aren't left with your mess. So
Yeah.
You can attend that, or you can Google AARP. AARP is like the most amazing resource on the planet Earth for everything, including wills and power of attorneys. Local attorneys have also had like these workshops or get together for a glass of wine and talk about wills and trusts, which I think probably makes that conversation go more smoothly with a little glass of wine. Alaska Legal Services also does workshops. They did one on January 22nd at the Juneau Library. I don't know when their next one is. They're periodic. But the next time they have one, if you see that at your local library, our local library is kind of like AARP. They're everywhere doing everything, helping everybody. And the last thing I wanted to say is at the end of the day, clean out your house. Your kids don't want your stuff. Make it easy on the people you love. Get your affairs in order so that your transition to whatever your next life is nice and smooth and calm. So that's what I had for today. Oh, Linda has some announcements too.
Yes, Linda. I was just going to say, if you want to help with your, you know, if you want some motivation, just tell Claire Richardson that you don't have a will or advanced care directive, and she'll make you do it.
Oh boy, absolutely.
She'll show up at your house.
She is on it. She is on it.
All right, Linda, what do you got?
All right, I'm going to start with celebrating National Senior Independence Month. And remind everyone to think about an older person or a community member that you can share resources that enable the older person to live more independently and have a full, happy life. Reach out to your neighbor, somebody that you haven't, a relative or a friend you haven't contacted for a while on the phone. And when we care for our older residents, future generations will learn to care for us. And like we say, we're all getting there. So demonstrate your care, and we're also always, the AARP and the Commission on Aging, concerned about providing accessibility to buildings, and we've talked about that before, too, around town. And so just get out there, visit with a senior, friend, relative, neighbor, and show that you care. Get out there. I'm just so into that right now with everything going on in the world. So the two other things that I'd like to mention are the library. We're working with the library on Fuzz and Juno Reads.
Fuzz, that's a great book.
That's great. Mary Roche's book, Fuzz, When Nature Breaks the Law, is the Juno Reads book this year. And there's a bear talk out at the Valley Library from 6 to 7 on February 19th to talk about bears in Juno. And
that's
humans and bears in Juno. And so that's really cool. And the reason I'm bringing this out, AARP is helping sponsor this. We bought most of the books that are out there.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're giving the books out
the
for
books free,
free at the library.
Just go to the library and then pick up a couple of other good
reads. And there's going to be lots of events over the next couple months related to the book.
Yeah.
The first one that I'm going to tell you about is at the university, out at the University of Alaska, on the 23rd of February from 5:30 to 7:30 in the Student Lounge in the Marant Building. And they're gonna be talking about the book and what you think about it. And it's just an open mic time to go talk about it.
That's cool.
And then I mentioned the bear talk on the 19th. So there'll be all kinds of other events coming up as well. So take advantage of that and get your book if you don't have it yet.
Go to juno.org/library and you'll probably learn all about it. Juno Reads.
And they're available. The books are available at all the libraries. So get yours before they're all taken off the shelf. And the last thing I want to mention is, unfortunately, this is my downer, tax time is coming.
It's here.
Death and taxes.
I know.
It's getting all those things in the mail.
The AARP Foundation Tax Aid IRS Certified Counselors have set up their schedule, and assistance is available by appointment on Mondays 10 to 3 and Saturdays 10 to 4. From February 7th, real soon.
That's Saturday.
To April 11th, out at St. Peter Hall at St. Paul Catholic Church out on Atlin Drive in the Valley. And so to schedule an appointment, you can go to aarpfoundation.org/taxaid. and look up your zip code and find out when there's a time available, and you can set up someone to help you do your taxes.
And this is free?
It is.
And you don't have to be a member of AARP?
That's right. That's correct. You just need to have tax help and have a simple tax. I mean,
yeah, there's certain things they can't help you with.
There's certain things they can't help you with.
If you have a lot of investments and business stuff.
That's right. All that stuff.
Yeah, rentals. Yeah, yeah. No, no,
that's right.
But for us regular folk.
Regular folks. Yep, exactly.
So I have some good news to end with, actually, since we've talked about death and taxes. The Juneau Commission on Aging has also been sponsoring through the library, because they're so darned cooperative, Monday Mahjong.
Oh, yeah.
And so Monday Mahjong has taken off. And we've now, because we have so many people showing up at Monday Mahjong, we've added Wednesday Training Mahjong.
Okay.
So that next Monday, we will have our regular Monday Mahjong. And then on Wednesday, we will have a training class for people that are interested in learning how to play this game that has very arcane, weird rules that make it really fun. And it works the heck out of your brain.
I love that. Deborah Craig, Linda Kruger from the Juneau Commission on Aging, thank you so much. Gunath Cheesh. And we'll see you next month.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Boston.
This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kakul'at Florence Marks Sheikley. And the word this week is Ayauditi.
Ayauditi.
That means it's stormy. And here is a sentence. It's very stormy today. Let's hear it again.
Ayauditi.
It's stormy. Gunath Cheesh to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska at Southeast for this audio.
Kakashat Florence Mark Shakely is Shukach Adi and a child of a Chukunidi man. She grew up on Mark's trail in a family that used Tlingit as the primary language and were involved in documenting, teaching, and publishing in Tlingit. She has taught the language at all levels and has served as the teacher of teachers in the Juneau area for decades now.
And please tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Is the cure for cancer in whales? This is Sandra Singh Lowe with the lowdown on science. Big animals need tons of cell divisions to grow. That means more chances for DNA oopsies, aka cancer. But bowhead whales, despite their size, aren't more prone to cancer. Why? Enter Dennis Firsanov and Max Zucker at the University of Rochester. They compared the DNA repair proteins of bowheads, mice, cows, and humans. And bowhead whales are loaded with a protein called CIRBP. Way more than humans. And adding the whale protein to human cells improved DNA repair. By studying how other species repair DNA, we may prevent cancer. And that makes me want to put a little bow on a whale's head.
Listening to community-supported Juneau Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juneau, 91.7 Juneau Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube and Facebook pages. I'm Boston Christopher. Tomorrow, first Friday, February 6th, Spice Cafe hosts the exhibit Bees in Juno. This show is a result of a photo competition that was run last fall and is adjacent to a larger project called Acoustic Turbulence from a local group, Orpheus Project, which will have concerts in a couple weeks, and they're going to come on the show next week to talk all about that. The show opening at Spice Cafe has 13 images and will open during First Friday and will be auctioned off by Senator Jesse Kiel at 6 p.m. Yes. I think that's going to happen tomorrow, which is great. So I'm joined now by the owner of Spice Cafe, Nimi Phillips.
Good
to see you, Wasiti. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes. And I also have photographers and artists, and one of them is the curator of the exhibit. But I have Nicole Steger, who was in the competition and has a photo in this exhibit. Welcome in, Wasiti. Oh, two photos, Matt says. He curated two photos. And then I also have Matt Brown, who is the curator of this exhibit. We'll talk about all of that here in just a second. But welcome in, Nicole. How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you.
Awesome. And Wasiti to you, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing awesome.
Okay. So let me start with Nimi. So Nimi, I know this is like Haley Duran has this giant project that she's doing, Acoustic Turbulence, and working with Orpheus Project and Todd Hunt. How did they wrangle you into this?
Well, Todd Hunt plays for me, like as a musician, and also Spencer too.
Yeah.
And Emily is in our Bollywood dance group.
Okay.
So that's how I know the three. And they asked me about displaying, and I said, sure.
You
and
said
that's
yes.
Right. We want to support all musicians and artists in Juno. So.
And you're talking about Dr. Emily Kane,
yes,
Spencer
yeah.
Edgars, and, of course, and W. Todd Hunt, who runs the Orpheus Project.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, of course, is a friend of Juno Afternoon, has been on here tons of times.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk to them again next week. So
nice.
How long will this exhibit be
this
up?
This will be just for the February.
Okay.
Because we will already have the Plain Rain group at the Spice Cafe. So we took the Plain Rain group one side down to have these guys up there. So
I see. Okay. So. And you're such a supporter of the arts in Juno. Obviously, you do your own thing, too, with the Bollywood dance and also the festival every year.
Yeah.
The Festival of Colors and the Holy
Festival.
Holy
Festival,
yeah,
yes.
Holy Festival. And those are all coming soon.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that next Thursday.
Yeah, and where does this love of the arts for you come from?
Well, I think it started with my dad. He plays a pianist and, you know, he composes his own music and or he used to. He passed away. And when I first opened the Spice Cafe, first thing I did is build a stage for at least six musicians to sit. And that's where it's all started. And
oh, wow.
We have such an artistic town. And I don't think we have enough places to showcase their pieces. So I'm just a small part of it.
That's
and I'm
great.
So happy to do it.
And Spice Restaurant is right next door.
Right
and you
next
opened,
door.
You opened Spice Cafe, was it a couple years ago
2023,
now?
In March of 2023,
Time
yeah.
just flies, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's
That's
going
almost
fast.
3 years of
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to have another venue like that and a wonderful supporter of the arts.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for doing
thank
that
you.
To me. So, Matt, can you tell us a little bit about this Bees in Juno, the competition, and your part in it as a curator, and sort of run that down for us?
In August, I was asked by Todd and Emily to curate or co-curate. I'm a co-curator with Carrie Howard.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Carrie is down in Arizona right now with some personal issues, and she's not able to be here, although she would probably love to be sitting here telling us about it. So Carrie and I had worked on a previous Orpheus project, the Romeo project.
Oh, right, sure.
So we did the same thing. We had a photo contest where we actually asked the artists in Juno who had taken pictures of Romeo, and they submitted them.
Oh,
and then
cool.
we curated and selected a number, and then we made a book.
Mm.
We had a lot more time on that one. This one, we started in August, which unfortunately was a little after the bumblebee season. So we were kind of scraping to try to get people to bring, although the bees weren't around much at that point, so people were able to submit, which is why Nicole got two images.
Mm-hmm.
And another artist also got two images in because we were just not a lot of bees around at that time. So,
yeah.
But it's all about the bumblebees, and mm-hmm. they will begin. I'm not an expert in bees at all, by the way. I can take pictures of them, but they're going to, when they talk about the Orpheus Project, they'll tell you about the whole premise of this project, and it's all about the bees and the mating and the queens and the drones. And
yeah, I can't wait to hear Haley talk about this mm-hmm. next week. We're going to have them on. I think it's Wednesday or Thursday next week. We'll talk about that project that's coming up. Yeah. We're going to go deep on that with a bunch of different aspects of it. But this is like the beginning of this process, mm-hmm. Having this art show photo. There's like 13 images.
14.
I think it's 14 total? Okay.
Well, we had some that were submitted where the quality wasn't good enough. It was good enough for a calendar, and there's calendars available mm-hmm. with yeah. all of these pictures mm-hmm. as well. But some of the pictures were taken with cell phones.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And, you know, people like to go out in their gardens and get pictures of the mm-hmm. bees, but they weren't able to be blown up because all of the medals that will be auctioned off tomorrow are 16 by 24 on matte metal.
Oh, so these photos finish. Have been put onto the that metal that you see
yes,
that some
they're,
photo
they're beautiful. They look yeah. good on metal.
Oh,
metal
that's cool.
Metal is the new gotta have for
gotta have
photos.
It. Yeah, everybody's doing it. Yeah.
Everybody's doing it. It's fairly reasonably cheap for art, and they last for almost ever.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to worry about paper and glass. I mean, when you buy a paper print, then you have to think about matting and a frame.
Framing.
And by the time you get done with all of that and archival mm-hmm. glass and all these things, and you end up, you could be $400 for a
oh,
print.
Oh, easy.
Or more.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
I just printed one for myself. It was $800.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
But it was a large one. These are going to start, you know, they have a minimum bid that they're going to ask for these, but these are all for a the project, the Orpheus Project.
Orpheus Project, so. Nonprofit performance yeah. group here in town. I know I saw on their homepage at orpheusproject.org, I believe there's the list for the calendars, like people mm-hmm. could order them and stuff right. like that. And that's kind of cool. And are you a photographer yourself?
I am. I've okay. been a photographer probably longer than most people alive. I started in the early 70s. So I've been through film. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I shot film for many, many, many years. And then when digital came out, we went to the digital cameras, and then mm-hmm. digital SLRs came out. So it's been an evolution.
Yeah, I bet you've seen it over the years, just the whole evolution of things.
I have
things.
Seen it yeah. over the years. The stuff that's out and the mirrorless cameras that are out now are just amazing. Mm. You know, Juno probably has one of the highest photographer populations per capita of any place in the U.S.
No idea why. There's nothing here to photograph.
So we have all these people out on a daily basis taking pictures, and it's just picture cards.
What's your primary thing that you like to photograph?
Well, you know, like most photographers here, I've kind of done the full gambit. I moved here in 07, and I started doing portraits and weddings and mm-hmm. seniors, and we do real estate. I still do real estate every once in a while. Mm. But my main focus now is wildlife.
Okay.
And that's because photographing people can be, you know, sometimes challenging, but with wildlife, they don't care how they look, and you don't have to worry about lighting and studios. You just go out to where
you
they
just
are.
Make it happen. Yeah,
and as long as you're not bothering them, you can get some really beautiful shots.
And where can we find and follow you, Matt?
I would say the best place to follow me is on Instagram or Facebook under Photos on the Wild Side.
Photos on the Wild Side.
Right.
Okay, great.
Or my name, Matthew Brown. You'll come up to either one. I have a Instagram page, and I also have a Facebook page.
Awesome. That's great. And Nicole Steger, so what inspired you to enter this contest last fall?
Well, Matt said, Nicole, we need pictures of bees. And I said, okay, I'm on it. But I had a hard time finding any because the bees in my garden didn't show up this year, or I guess last year. So we're talking about now. But I happened to just my liatris flowers bloomed, and one solitaire honeybee came out, and I grabbed that shot, and I put it in there, and then I was out at the shrine, and there was a bumble there, so I got that on the Alaska state flower, the forget-me-not.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I submitted both of those, and that's what's printed and hanging at Nimi's very beautiful restaurant.
And how long have you been in photography, Nicole?
I started when I was, you know, a little girl, but 14, and I started on film. I interviewed with you last February because I was the featured artist for the Juno Artist Gallery.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
So 14, I got my first SLR film camera.
And then,
like Matt, I've just progressed through it all, and now I'm at mirrorless and shooting primarily wildlife. I love birds mostly.
Yeah. So for those amateurs, I have my iPhone, right? I got my phone. And these are pretty good cameras. Apparently, that's what they say on the interwebs.
They're excellent.
What's a good tip for somebody like me who's an amateur when I want to get a good photo? And I mean, I sort of have heard of this rule of three and like the way you put the thing in the shot. But what's a tip or two that you could give us for folks who are out there want to take good photos?
Well, with any cell phone these days, the modern ones, the most recent ones, they are way above where cameras were when I first started in digital cameras.
Wow.
So you know, and you say amateurs, but I know pros that use, and I use my 16 Pro, Apple 16 Pro, right alongside of my Pro gear.
Oh, wow. They've come that far, right? I mean,
they come out good. You can't blow them up as much because the sensor is just really small.
Okay.
But you can get a good idea how the picture is going to look. So it's really good for video, number one, but also for testing your compositions.
I see.
There are a lot of rules in photography, but rules are not things that you have to follow. They're just guides on where you should go generally.
Yeah.
But as an artist, you can do pretty much whatever you want as long as it's your art and you're filling that desire to get that art out. So the rule of thirds, you know, some people have, you know, if you're photographing an animal and he's looking this direction, you want to put that animal on the far right side.
You want your animal looking into the photo, not at the edge of the photo, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just little simple things like that. But I've also done some teaching through the city, and they have photography classes every once in a while, and I've done those. And sometimes we'll have Aurora classes.
Oh, yeah. That's
where
fun.
We would teach people how to shoot the Aurora.
I love that.
But the difference is now iPhones and cell phones can take pictures of the Aurora without having to have all the camera gear. They do, however, they use AI. All the phones have AI in them, so that's why you get all those really bold colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's because the camera substitutes saturation into the photo. So it's a lot easier to get a picture of the Aurora when it's the color is boosted. You see it a lot better. While you're standing out there, you don't often even see the Aurora. But you take a picture with your phone and it'll bring the colors out, which is the same process as using a still camera or a digital SLR or mirrorless. You have to set it on a tripod and then you have a long exposure to bring those colors out. And you do that now with just a regular phone. So,
well, congratulations to you all on this show, Nicole. Congratulations for having some photos in there.
Thank you.
It's the Bees in Juno exhibit happening tomorrow at Spice Cafe. Senator Jesse Keel will begin auctioning them off about 6 p.m. And Nicole Steger, Matt Brown, and Nimi Phillips, thank you so much. Gwyneth Cheesh, really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. Find live stream archives on KTO's YouTube page. Special thanks to Alaska Airlines, Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company for sponsoring the show. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis and Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh.